Hey there, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of the Home Class Movie Chat. We are so excited for you to be here
Hey,
today.
hon,
Yes? What?
what about the intro music?
I forgot about that. Here comes the music.
Everybody, welcome back to the Home Class Movie Chat. We are your hosts, Kat
And Paul.
And we are movie addicts.
Yeah, we don't watch regular TV anymore. I know there's regular TV out there, but we just watch movies and everything between Netflix,
Amazon Prime,
Amazon
Disney
Prime, Disney
Plus. I
Plus,
mean, you name it.
YouTube, you name it, we do it. So,
and actual DVDs.
Yes, exactly. We do a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
But
so what are we doing this week, Paul?
This week we are doing a movie that was released on September the 25th, 2021. It stars Ethan Hawke, and I'm sure by now everyone's sitting there going, I know which one this is. Do you know which one this is? Well, if you don't, it is The Black Phone. And
there will be tons of spoilers, so if you
yes.
haven't seen it yet, stop now, go watch it, and then come back.
Yeah, definitely, because this is a movie that... There's a lot of confronting issues within this movie. There is definitely, I mean, obviously there's the underlying thing of child abduction, but there is also child abuse within the movie. So if these two things are very triggering to you, maybe
you might
stop
want
the
to go on to our
podcast.
Next episode.
Yeah, maybe go to the next episode of our podcast. And if those two areas are triggering to you, maybe don't watch the movie.
Yeah, I have to say this was a hard movie to watch at times.
It was. I firmly believe that with regards to one of the main character, Finn, or Finny as he's
Finny.
Known, his father.
Well, now I thought this was a really interesting departure for Ethan Hawke because he's always the good guys.
Yeah, he is. I mean, he did The Purge, and I think that's where it sort of started, that he's leading down a little bit into a darker path. But
what was interesting is that director Derrickson said that I think he's my favorite actor I've worked with. He recalls trying to convince Hawke to do Sinister in 2012, despite the actor's protests that he didn't really like or watch horror. Hawke had been concerned that it would be a dark experience, but Derrickson convinced him that it's actually a lot of fun to make horror movies. He had to be convinced once again for this film, The Black Phone, but it was because he doesn't really play villains and told Derrickson the script would have to be exceptional for him to sign on. Hawke called back that night after reading it, left a voicemail in the voice of the grabber, and Derrickson knew he had him hooked.
Yeah, I definitely say, I mean, I did mention the other one, The Purge, and yes, he wasn't a bad guy in The Purge at all. But it was a much darker movie than what he's been,
Well,
what I've been used to.
Ethan Hawke is not one to shy away from things that have intense storylines or even darker themes to them.
Yeah.
It's just that he's not usually the dark character. Like, he was in Dead Poets Society and he was amazing in Dead Poets Society.
Funny enough, I couldn't remember him doing that, but the very first time I ever saw him do it was, or ever saw a movie of him. I mean, obviously I saw Dead Poets Society, it just didn't ring to me that was Ethan Hawke.
Yeah.
But the one that really I remember is Reality Bites with him and Winona Ryder. And
I'm
that
not
was,
sure I ever saw that.
Yeah. And that was the very first one that I always remember Ethan Hawke being in. And he's just an amazing actor. And this movie really pushes the boundaries to just what a talented actor he really is.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. He really is. And this is in a lot of ways kind of biographical, autobiographical of Scott Derrickson, director and co-writer Scott Derrickson's own childhood.
Really?
Oh,
Okay.
yeah. He said he's known to say that his childhood had its own violence, but there was also a societal wave, including Ted Bundy's trip through Colorado, the murder of Derrickson's next door neighbor, and even a phone call that saw him talk briefly with one of the Manson family murderers. And he actually
Okay.
says the primary emotion that I associate with my own childhood is fear.
Yeah, well. I mean, it's interesting how you've got actors that play these sort of roles. I mean, one of the biggest common things that's amazing to even realize is that Freddy Krueger, the actual character of Freddy Krueger, was actually developed purely because Wes Craven would look out of his bedroom window and see a very creepy guy walk past his house when he was younger.
Really?
Even so much so that this creepy guy would obviously worked out that he was freaking Wes Craven out. So this guy would actually stop and stare up at his window.
Oh, that is creepy, man.
Yeah. So Freddy Krueger was developed in the fact that this guy was creeping Wes Craven out. So, you know, when you've got those sort of scenarios, plus, you know, this guy is getting a phone call from one of the Manson families. Yeah. Like, holy shit. I mean, that is really,
I know, right?
That is really something.
Okay. Now, a little bit of trivia before we jump in.
Yeah.
The Grabber is based on real life serial killers.
So hang on, before you say the Grabber, who's
that's Ethan Hawke's character.
Thank you.
The one who kidnaps the children and tortures them.
Yeah.
And well, they don't know that what's happening to these kids. All the community knows is that these kids are going missing and they're never heard from again.
Yeah. And the news report comes out and says that this guy is known as the Grabber.
Yeah. The community has christened him the Grabber.
Yeah.
So the Grabber is based on real life serial killers. Ted Bundy, John, who, as we know, murdered college co-eds.
Yep.
John Wayne Gacy, who had a thing for little boys,
and
Jeffrey
boys.
Dahmer, who had a thing for slightly older boys.
Yeah.
So Ted Bundy would use a ruse to lure victims to help him to his car. John Wayne Gacy used a belt on his victims, who were all young boys, as we said. Jeffrey Dahmer had one victim escape from his apartment only to be recaptured. And John Wayne Gacy also buried victims in the crawl space basement of his house.
Yeah, that's one of the interesting things that they've got on Netflix still. They've got this story about Jeffrey Dahmer. And it is absolutely terrifying to think that the police, and I mean, obviously he was so good at making them believe what he said, that they actually returned one of his victims to him.
Well,
even after he'd escaped.
The thing about that one that makes me so angry, and this is why I think it's an excellent miniseries to the point where I actually couldn't watch the whole thing because it was giving me nightmares.
I watched it all the way through.
He had a neighbor. Okay, so Jeffrey Dahmer is a fairly young white guy living in a lower income neighborhood and building. And next door to him is a black woman who's working, I think, as like a nurse or something. I forget exactly. But she called the police multiple times saying that there's something wrong going on in that
apartment
next door or across the hall, and the smell, because he was dismembering people and sticking them in his refrigerator, and he just kept saying that, oh, I bought meat and it went off and I just haven't thrown it out yet, sorry, you know, or whatever, and that they actually went into the apartment and didn't, and I mean there was stuff there in plain sight so they wouldn't have needed a warrant for it, but they just didn't pay attention and they chose to disregard everything that this woman said because she's a black woman living in a lower income neighborhood.
They didn't do a thorough search.
No, they did not do their due diligence, and that is why Dahmer continued to do what he did as long as he did.
Yeah, which is absolutely terrifying.
It's shameful is what it is.
Now, one thing I love about this movie is that the budget for this movie was between $16 and $18 million.
Mm-hmm.
And the box office was $161.4 million.
I think I can go you better.
Oh, okay.
The script was written in only 6 weeks.
No, really?
And the entire film
yeah.
was shot in 33 days.
That is like commando filming.
Yeah.
That's guerrilla warfare.
That's like movie making back in the 20s when moving pictures first started and they had like no budget and they would just crank these things out one, and they would do like hundreds of them in a year because they were just cranking these things out.
So that was almost like they had no budget for the movie. So they decided, okay, one take. Yeah, that's good enough. Move on. I mean, as far as the locations of the movie, the location of the movie only really centers around a basement.
Yeah.
That's really all it really does. It goes from Finney's house to the school. There's a baseball field as well. Mm-hmm. There's a convenience store. Then there's the basement. And that's really all it is.
That's
so
really it. Yeah.
They didn't really have to decorate the
yeah,
whole
there
thing.
Wasn't a huge expense account for the sets. No.
Even the costume and the costuming, there really wasn't any big thing with regards to what Finney was wearing, because what he was abducted in is what he wore for the entire movie.
No, actually, the
he was wearing a baseball.
The greatest outfit. Expenses, honestly, was probably on the masks, because the grabber, we never really see his face until the extreme end of the film. And
yes,
even then,
right.
It's not even a full-on view
no.
of his face. You never really see him. But the grabber wears several, I mean, honestly, really creepy masks throughout the film that each expose a different part of his face. And they were designed by legendary prosthetic makeup artist Tom Savini. And Mason Thames, who played Finney, said that the first time he saw the mask coupled with Ethan Hawke's bone-chilling performance, he was absolutely terrified. And in the beginning, they were actually originally leather, but they decided to use the ones that they ended up doing. And in the beginning, he was supposed to be a clown, but because it had been out, they were like, okay, let's turn him into like a magician or something.
But also the clown, that's too close to Gacy.
Yeah,
it would almost become like another story of Gacy.
But the irony is that it is based on a short story written by Stephen King.
Yeah, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that one.
Yeah.
Wow, okay.
And, okay, I was going to do this one later, but since we're talking about it, there are a few similarities between this film and It. A very eerie villain goes after kids, often trying to get them to approach with promises of magic tricks or something fun.
Yep.
The villain has a costume or familiar look of some kind, and while It shows a red balloon at times to denote danger, there are two black balloons in this film floating after the protagonist is taken. Plus, Gwen, his sister, is riding through the rain with a yellow raincoat in search of Finney. And the grabber's brother, Max, is played by James Ransom, who also played the older version of Eddie Kasprak in It Chapter 2 in 2019.
Oh, which was really disappointing.
It really was.
Number one was brilliant. Number two was like, why'd you even bother? Yeah. Now, before we get started into this podcast, remember, we do have an ability that you can contact us on, which is hello@homeclassmoviechat. Now, there you can send us an email. And what I'm actually putting out this week is, you know, Kat and I can sit here and come up with all sorts of movies to, you know, to do. But I'm sure there are movies that you would like us to do that you actually enjoy, and you might think that we'll enjoy doing as well. So if you would like to send us an email, hello@homeclassmoviechat, send us an email. Obviously, give us your name, because we need to know who we're going to dedicate the episode to. And let us know what movie you would like us to do on our podcast, and we will then make that as your episode. Because as
He's
I said, we can
begging for people to send in suggestions, because he doesn't want me to make him watch West Side Story.
That has nothing to do with it. We have got things like Megaforce coming up. Oh, we have Megaforce. We've got Megaforce coming up. Yeah, we got the Thumb Kiss, baby. So we've got those sort of movies coming up. So we have
help me suggest things other than Megaforce.
We are going to do Megaforce, regardless of whoever gives us an idea, we're doing Megaforce. So look, as I said, if you want to send us an email, hello@homeclassmoviechat, and give us some suggestions of what you'd like us to do on our podcast, and we would be very happy to do that as an episode. So that is your
hello@homeclassmoviechat.com.
Yeah, that hello@homeclassmoviechat.com. That is your task for this week, to go out and give us some ideas for movies.
Okay, now, before we move on, I found one more thing I wanted to add. So the grabber, as we just said, uses black balloons to abduct his victims. This is reminiscent of the painting the daughter does on her bedroom wall in the film Sinister in 2012, which features a figure holding black balloons and is by the same writer, director, Scott Derrickson, and also starred Ethan Hawke.
Oh, I didn't know that one either.
So, fun fact there for you.
There we go. Look, before we get started on this podcast, we need to listen to the trailer. So I think we need to sit back and relax, because here is the trailer to The Black Phone.
I'll be home in the morning.
Where are you going?
I'm staying over at Susie's tonight.
What's new? The flyer.
The papers call him the grabber.
I wish you wouldn't call him that.
You don't actually believe that story, do you? Because he can't hear you, and he doesn't really take kids that safe.
Oh, you goof. Well, isn't that just peachy keen?
You need some help?
You see that? Yeah. Would you hand me my hat? Yes, sir. I am a part-time magician.
Are those type of ones in there?
Would you like to see a magic trick?
I have an announcement to make. One of our students, Finny Blake, was abducted.
What if I could help the police find Finny?
Doesn't work. Not since I was a kid.
I'll scream. I'll scratch your face.
This face?
Daddy, I had a dream about it.
What happened in your dream?
He was taken.
By a man with black balloons?
Yes.
We never released those details.
Cable loose from down there.
There's a combination lock on the inside of this storm door.
What's the combination?
I carved it in the wall.
Hang up the phone!
The tree, the door, the gate. I've never seen it before except in my dream.
You don't have much time.
You're gonna use a weapon. You raise the phone, step back, and swing.
Look what you made me do.
Please hurry!
You remember what I told you?
There's someday I should stand up for myself.
Someday is today, Finn.
Okay, now before we get into it again, I've got one more thing I wanted to share.
Are you gonna give us all the fun facts at the beginning of the podcast so we will not have anything at the end?
No, but this isn't directly related to the movie. It's more outside fun fact.
All right, okay.
Okay, which either way, it's like I can never get a word in edgewise, so I got to get it in when I can. So the movie was originally scheduled to premiere in January of 2022. But they started doing like focus groups and running test viewings and stuff like that. And the preview showings were unexpectedly fantastic.
They are.
And once Blumhouse, the production company, realized just how great the early reactions were, they decided to push it back to June 2022 and make it part of the summer blockbusters.
Yeah, I must admit, even the trailer that we just listened to, the trailer really drags you into the movie. So, you know,
well, that's the thing. I don't like, I don't mind, not horror, but, I can't think of that word. Thrillers. I like thrillers. I don't like horror, and I definitely don't do slasher films. And you showed me the preview for this one. And I remember looking at you and saying, I really hate how much I want to see this right now.
Yeah. Because it drags you in. Even
because
on the trailer,
I'm like, I really have to see this now.
Yeah. Now, don't take our word for it because, I mean, we're doing this podcast. We've seen it. On our Rotten Tomato score now, obviously, as everyone knows, Rotten Tomato scores are 60 and above. That's they're saying, go see it, go see it. 60 and below, they're going, see it at your own peril or it's terrible. I don't know where Megaforce. Birdemic. I don't know where that one is.
We should find out where Birdemic and Megaforce are on that.
I'll try to do that at the end of the podcast, let you know where Birdemic and Megaforce came on Rotten Tomato.
Awesome.
Now, on 257 reviews, the Rotten Tomato score for this movie was 83%.
Wow.
Which is actually very, very good. Now, there was verified ratings of 5,000 audience members, and out of that, they scored 88% out of 100.
Wow.
And it was a 7.6 out of 10. So they are saying this movie is well worth going to see. And I don't disbelieve that, actually, because it wasn't
perfect. And it definitely had a few issues and a couple of things that were like, there's the twist at the end that honestly was not clear. It took a bit to get to really understand what was going on. But overall, I thought it was exceptionally done.
Now, you asked me what it was.
What?
Okay, so Birdemic. Uh-huh. Just to give you an idea. We're trying to get into this podcast, but we're being sidetracked. Okay, so there was the Rotten Tomatoes score on Birdemic is 18%.
Wow, that high.
And over 1,000 plus ratings of audience scores as 27%.
That's seriously high.
That's very conservative.
That's obscenely high for that horrible, horrible film.
Well, we have to, you know, obviously see the number three when that comes out. Now, I'm going to go to Megaforce. Now, Megaforce was released in 1982. Please be nice, Rotten Tomato. Please be nice. I can't see it's going to be nice.
It has no reason to be nice, honey.
Okay. On a tomato meter score, Megaforce, 0%.
It got lower than Birdemic.
And on an audience ratings of 1,000 plus, 43%.
How much?
43.
Wow.
So it scored 0. 0%. It is basically saying, if you go and see this movie, you are an absolute fool.
I can't believe Birdemic rated higher.
I cannot believe that.
Because honestly, I would much rather watch Megaforce than Birdemic.
Now, we're going to sidetrack again.
Come on. We got to get on or people are going to stop listening, honey.
No, we got to do Shock and Terror. This is part two. The Resurrection. I need to see what Birdemic number two got. Rotten Tomato. Let's see. Birdemic, The Resurrection, please. Look what we got. Okay, so Birdemic Part 2, The Resurrection, 0 on the tomato meter.
Okay.
And audience ratings, 100 plus ratings, 26%. So it actually was worse than Birdemic, the original one.
Well, I could have told you that.
Yeah.
So all right, now let's get into the black phone before people start walking and running away from us.
So this movie opens up in 1978, and we are seeing the opening of a baseball game going on. And then we see this young guy, this young boy by the name of Bruce, and he comes over to Finney. He's the opposing baseball player, but he's the pitcher. Oh, no, sorry, he's not the pitcher. Sorry, he's the batter, because Finney, our main person, is the pitcher, and Finney actually manages to almost strike him out. Unfortunately, Bruce gets a home run, but at the end of it, instead of, you know, this guy coming over to Finney and going, you know, you're a piece of shit, you can't do this and that, he comes over and he says, wow, you almost had me. Your arm is mint. Remember that. Yeah. Your arm is
that's
mint.
That's a key phrase. Your arm is mint.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah. So then we're seeing that Bruce is, you know, on his bike, on his BMX bike, and he's going for a ride through the neighborhood until we see on the left-hand corner, we see a black van coming into the street, and the movie then fades to black, and we're starting to see wanted posters. We're starting to see intercutting with people being hurt.
Didn't we see him grab into the van? But,
no.
Oh, okay.
Person we see that.
Oh, okay. So I wanted to point out, though, that the grabber wears a stovepipe hat and abducts a child walking home from a baseball game, very much like Rose the Hat in Dr. Sleep from 2019, which was also reviewed on this podcast.
Yes, it was.
And get this, was written by Joe Hill's father, Stephen King.
Uh-huh. Because...
And I said that. I said, this reminds me of Rose the Hat.
Yeah.
And then it reminded me of Dr. Sleep. I actually said that to you.
Now, Stephen King's son is called what? Joe Hill?
Joe Hill, yeah.
Do you know what his actual name is?
No.
Joe King.
Yeah, I changed that too.
He changed it when he was able to. He changed it by deep-hole. He changed it for two reasons. One, joking. And number two, he didn't want to go under his father's shadow, because Stephen King casts an enormously huge
enormous shadow.
So if you're going to do something on your own, off your own back, there's a good idea to do it that way. So
okay, can I just put in here, it's a total non sequitur, but can I just put in here that
sure.
on the topic of changing names, I totally get it. For example, mm-hmm. I have a friend, who you know, whose last name is Kruger, and he has a brother named Fred. Fred changed his first name.
I was going to say, you change your name from Fred Kruger to, that's, well, I mean, there are people that do
just those saying. Things,
but I just think Joe King is just ridiculous.
That's cruel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now really we cruel. See, this is, the grabber is basically, it's around.
Oh, actually, before we leave the baseball game, though,
I'm just trying to get to where the location is, which is in Denver.
This is Denver, Colorado in 1978.
Yes.
Now, I'd like to point out, if you look closely and you go back and watch the film, the opening scene in 1978 shows a guy at the kid's baseball game opening a can of Coors beer using a pull tab. In 1978, Coors wasn't using pull tabs, but instead had its own unique two-hole push-in style opening system.
Thank you. I was going to say that because even my father used to drink a beer that had you push it down on one end and you push it down on the other end.
Yeah. And
that was in Australia.
What's that?
And that was in Australia. So yeah. we didn't have the pool tabs until the early 80s.
And taking place in 1978, we see a completed Wells Fargo Center in the opening credits, but it wasn't fully built until
1983. Oh, okay.
Whoopsie.
Yes, whoopsie. Yeah, they're exactly right. So we've got siblings Finney and Gwen Blake, and they live in the area of Denver with their very abusive alcoholic father. And it's a dysfunctional relationship because obviously the father works night. I
think he worked night shift.
Night shift. And the kids poor kids
just kind of take care of themselves.
Yeah. And they really
their mother died a couple years ago.
And they really have to tiptoe around their father, you know. So the next thing we see is that Finney and Gwen are walking to school. And unfortunately, Finney is, and I say Finney, we're just going to go with Finn because Finney's too bleh.
Well, Finney's what his sister calls him. Everybody else calls him Finn.
Finn, yeah. Finn's frequently bullied and harassed at school. And he's got a friendship with a classmate by the name of Robin. And Robin's one of these kids that he's like the ceremonial tough guy. And
he's an Asian kid and he knows how to fight. Oh no, that's no. what
Robin is not the Asian kid.
Oh, that's
Robin
right.
is a
this
a regular...
is why we need to do this right after we watch the movie, is I forget stuff.
Robin is a Caucasian guy and he's one of these token guys that just happens to beat the crap out of kids to make sure that everyone's aware that don't screw with me. And Finn's is very close to Robin. And at this stage, we're seeing that that Gwen and Finn are coming to school, and there's all you hear is fight, 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 fight. And we're seeing that Robin is beating the shit out of this kid who decides to disrespect him. So, of course, as we see that, you know, poor old Finn is being bullied, but Finn goes to the bathroom, and you got these three little tough little shits that come in to try and give him a
heart. Well, they think they're
tough.
But it's because they're a gang.
Yeah. But of course, when Robin walks in, he's like, hey, Finn, hi. And he's like, oh, good, Robin. And these three kids are sort of like blocking Robin's way. And Robin goes, move. And they just ceremoniously just move and parting the Red Sea to get out of the way, you know. So it's like, okay. So now we see that Bruce is, which is the baseball guy, he's unfortunately is abducted by the grabber because we did see that their van came into view as the screen went to black in the opening scene. So he's the first one that's been abducted. We don't see what actually happens to really anybody except Finn. And spoiler alert, Finn is going to get abducted, but we're going to get to that point.
Now, before Robin was abducted, though, we saw posters for the paperboy that got taken, right?
And Gwen is actually a psychic who she has psychic dreams just like her mother. And she actually dreams of Bruce's kidnapping. And she sees that he was taken by a man in a black van with black balloons. So, that's really interesting because she's at school one time and, you know, these two police officers, Detective Wright and Miller, come to Gwen and they want to interview her at school and they say, okay, so we want to know, what do you know? And she's like, well, he was abducted. I don't really know anything, but he was abducted. And all I saw was a man with black balloons. And one of the officers goes, that's really interesting, Gwen, because we found black balloons at the scene and that was never released. so how do you know this? And she goes, I just know. And they're going, no, no, I'm sorry. You don't just know. What is, and she's like, oh, that's right. I guess you think I'm the grabber. And they're like, we didn't say that. And she's like, well, I'm not the grabber. I just happened to have dreamt him and saw what he was abducted and yeah. who abducted him. And they're like, well, okay, well, who abducted him? And she's, and all she can say is a man in a black van with black balloons. That's now, all I can do.
This, okay. Denver is actually a pretty big, it's a city. It's not a town. It's a city. But the looks of where this location is, it makes it look like it's a small town on the way outskirts of Denver. Right.
Yeah.
And it looks like one of those little tiny bedroom communities where everybody knows, kind of like what I grew up in, where everybody knows everybody else and you're sick of everybody knowing your business. So please explain to me how the grabber has a house in this small community where everybody knows everybody else and nobody sees the black van.
Yeah, there is.
And
there
he
is,
does this in broad daylight and nobody sees it.
There is certainly holes within this movie that you can't really overlook, because if there's a kid saying, I mean, look, the police at this stage don't believe Gwen. They're like, yep, sure,
well,
you
well
know
that, and the grabber's but, doing it literally in his own backyard. So how does nobody see anything that has to do with him?
I mean, as we know, a lot of serial killers stay within their ethnicity, or they say in their own area.
No, they usually start there because it's their comfort zone, and then they move into other places farther out so that it can't be tracked back to them.
But it's, I mean, for this, I mean, what I'm
and
thinking,
he's staying in his own backyard, which is insane.
Yeah, but what I'm thinking with this situation is that if there's a young girl that says, "Oh, a black van," then how hard would it be for the police to suddenly go, okay, well, there couldn't be very many black vans around the place.
You know what? I don't believe her, but we really need to check this out.
However, in saying that, I just realized that there is a way that someone could actually disguise their van of they, you know, if it was sold black, they could paint it another color. So, you know, even if they find, I mean, they don't know the license plate. All she's saying is a black van. So really, it's going to be hit and miss unless you're going to have 60 police patrolling every street to try and find a black van.
But what
it's
I'm
going to
saying
take a lot
is
of time.
If it's that small of a community, if you're just driving around town, you'd see it parked in front of a house.
Yeah, you would. So
and
really,
are, you know,
there is a lot to this movie, but there are some holes that you have to just
Some things you just can't look too closely at.
Yeah,
but I do want to point out that the paper boy who was taken like
Bruce.
A year before the events of this film,
Bruce,
is actually a reference to Johnny Gosch, a paper boy from Iowa who was on a route with his dog Gretchen and disappeared. His dog was found later, but Johnny's disappearance remains unsolved to this day.
Yeah, that is terrifying.
Yeah.
That really is terrifying.
Best for those parents.
Yeah. So now with regards to what everything's going on, and we've already seen that Bruce has been abducted, and one of the very hard scenes to actually watch is Gwen comes home and Gwen says, and of course, obviously the father already knows that the police have spoken to Gwen.
Yep.
And Gwen is trying to explain to her father that, and I don't have the sound grab because I'm not going to play this because it's very distressing.
It's a really, really hard scene.
It's a very hard scene to watch. He's saying, you know, you are not seeing what you think you're seeing. And she's like, I am. I'm seeing these things. It's not a dream.
And he's literally trying to beat it out of her.
So he takes off his belt and he absolutely beats the shit out of his daughter.
And of course, Finney's standing there watching and there's nothing he can do about it because he's not big enough yet to take on his dad.
And what is even more distressing is she is screaming for her father to stop. And when he finally decides to stop beating her, and he's been beating her across the behind, he says to her, don't you even think about putting anything on that to try and numb the pain. You sit on it. So Finn's gone into the front lounge to watch TV, and his sister comes and is sitting on her swollen behind, absolutely sobbing, and Finn has got no way of stopping this, you know. Yeah. It's a now, very, very hard scene to watch, and I get very upset and very angry about that situation where you've got a father, you know, physically abusing his children in such a way. I mean, but once again, it's those sort of people that do that are not man enough to actually take on another man, because hey, someone of equal strength, you might be able to get the shit kicked out of you.
Well,
but
no,
go
this
with
is
some...
this is part of why the mother, did she leave or did she die?
She died.
She died. But I think that she ended up like drinking herself to death or whatever because of all of these.
And the father's an alcoholic, so he's got, but you know, he's got no excuse.
It's actually a foreshadow, you know, as hard as it is, it's actually a foreshadowing scene because it's because of her, of Gwen and her psychic dreams that we actually do end up finding Finn later on. But what's interesting is that the director was asked to cut the scene with Gwen being whipped with a belt by her father, played by Jeremy Davies, but no one pressured him to do so. And he said, sadly, it's not even illegal what he's doing, at least in 1978.
In 1978, it was not illegal because any child that would go to school with black and blue marks, the teachers in the school would just sit there and go, well, that's punishment.
Their parents' right to discipline.
Yeah. Yep. Nowadays, you put your hand on your kid, you might as well, you'll end up in federal prison.
Yep.
Which is I'm grateful for, because there are more children hopefully being saved by the abuse that some parents dish out. It is not, there is no such thing, as far as I'm concerned, of corporal punishment needs to be done in 2023. Yep. Corporal punishment went out when I was at school. So come on, you know, we don't need that. So unfortunately, Robin is actually abducted by the grabber, and as well as Finn is days later. Now Finn starts to wake up in a soundproof basement. He's very, very groggy, and this is when we're actually finding out from the grabber exactly what it was when he was actually taken.
Jesus. It's covered in blood. It's like I killed someone. You see that? Not like you can see shit. I know you're scared, but I'm not gonna hurt you anymore. What I said about snapping your neck, I was angry as all. And you did a number on my arm. But I'm not gonna hold it against you. I guess. Now we're even. You don't have to be scared. Because nothing bad is going to happen here. On that I give my word, Johnny. You like soda? I'll tell you what. I'm gonna go get you a soda. And then... Is that the phone? You hear a phone ringing? I'm gonna go see who it is. Then I'll get you a soda. And then I'll come back and explain everything.
So I think the one of the interesting things about this is when you hear the grabber say, oh, I'm not going to hurt you. And it's like, well, of course, you know, because he does say when his Finn's coming to, he goes, you know, you can't see. Yeah, you probably can't see shit, because he's already drugged him. Because you see at this stage that Finn was walking home and you see the black van, it's pulled up on the side of the road, and we see that the grabber's got this whole thing almost like a little magic trick. He comes out of the van and he's got a whole lot of groceries, and he spills the groceries and he goes, oh goodness me. And of course Finn, being such a nice kid, he goes, oh, would you like it, you know, would you like
well,
me to
as
go,
you
no.
normally would. It's like, oh, you dropped all of this, can I have to pick it up? Everybody,
and of course,
would do that.
Yeah, and of course the grabber loses his hat, and Finn, you know, nicely gives him his hat back. And of course this is when the grabber says, oh, would you like to see a magic trick? Well, it's at this stage that Finn then looks into the back of the van and goes, are they black balloons? And this is when we see that he's smothered, you know, obviously with chloroform or something, and thrown into the back of the van as
he's
passing out.
Didn't he inject something into his neck too?
I can't remember. He probably did.
I remembered that.
But in that scene we saw when he was coming to, you know, there's the grabber saying, oh, well, you know, hey, I'm not going to hurt you. Well, who is... what person would abduct someone and go, yeah, so by the way, I've abducted you to, you know, rape and kill you? Of course they're going to try and lull them into a false sense of security.
No, I've invited you here for a tea party.
Yeah, it's all okay, you know. So you know, now we're seeing that poor old Finn is, unfortunately, he's now trapped. And this is when he happens to look on the wall and there is an old black rotary phone, henceforth the name the Black Phone. Now, it's, we don't know it's disconnected, but in this scene, we see that the grabber basically tells Finn that, hey, no use holding that phone. It doesn't work.
It doesn't work. Not since I was a kid. Hang it up. I know you're scared and you want to go home. I'll take you home soon. It's just a... everything's all fucked up. I gotta be upstairs for a while. Something's come up.
What?
Never mind. What?
Did someone see something? Are the police coming? If you let me go before they get here, I promise I won't tell.
It's not the police.
Someone, though. Someone's coming. I'll scream. If someone's upstairs, they'll hear me.
No, he won't. Not with the door shut.
He?
With the door shut, no one can hear anything down here. I soundproofed it myself. So shout if you like. You won't bother anyone.
You're the one who killed the others. Bruce. Robin.
That wasn't me. That was someone else. I will never make you do anything that you won't like.
If you try to touch me, I'll scratch your face. And whoever's coming will see and ask why.
This face? Hang up the phone now.
So I think it's really interesting how he's trying to say to Finn, well, you know, this phone's been broken since I was a kid. So you think to yourself, well, wow, so he grew up in this house. But when he was saying, you know, there's nothing you can do. It's the place is soundproof. You can scream all you want. No one's going to hear you. The phone doesn't work. And all you've got to basically lay on is just
a mattress.
That is it. A filthy mattress.
No pillow, no blanket, no nothing.
No. And knowing that there are other children that have been in this room. And it's really interesting. I was watching this movie and going, wow, this is so close to Freddy Krueger. It's not funny. Because Freddy had, he had a black fedora, or he had a fedora, not a black one, but he had a fedora, brown fedora. But he had that sort of look. He was doing stuff in a boiler room, which is pretty close to a basement sort of situation. So there are so many comparisons between that. And as you said, John Wayne Gacy, who buried, you know, his victims in a crawl space underneath his house, which would technically be a basement if he had one. So.
No, there's a big difference between a basement and a crawl space.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Do you remember on The Big Bang Theory when they were trying to figure out if they could take down one of the walls in Howard's mother's house?
Oh, that's right. Yeah, they had to go under the crawl space.
Yeah, that small area.
Under the house.
That's a crawl space.
Right, gotcha. Ah, now I understand that.
Yeah, you've got like maybe 18 inches of clearance.
Yeah, so... Of course, we're seeing that, and as I said, this movie takes place in this in the basement. So unfortunately, we're seeing that Finn is just sitting there trying to work out, what am I going to do? I just don't know what I'm supposed to do. Of course, later, Finn hears the phone ring. Now, remember, this phone is disconnected, yeah. But he hears the phone ring.
Well, he goes to look at it, and it's not plugged into anything.
No, it's not. So he picks up the receiver, and on the other end of the phone, he hears that little statement, your arm is mint. And this is the first phone call that he gets from Bruce, which is Bruce's ghost. He's unable to remember his name, or who he was when he was alive.
Yeah.
But he does tell Finn some things with regard to what is in this room and what he can do to try and help him get out.
this is.
I don't remember my name.
Why not?
It's the first thing you lose.
First thing you lose when?
You know when.
How do you know my name?
We met once. Your arm is mint. You almost had me.
Bruce? Bruce Yamada?
Yeah. Bruce. I'm Bruce. Your arm is mint. You almost had me.
Did the phone ring for you?
It rang, but none of us heard it. Just you. The grabber hears the phone too, but he doesn't want to believe it.
Why are you calling me?
Your arm is mint. You almost had me. I'm glad it's you. Finny?
Yeah?
There's a dirt section of the floor in the hallway where the tile is loose.
Okay.
Dig down underneath the foundation. I tried, but there wasn't time for me to dig up and out the other side.
We'll have enough time.
Now, before we jump back in, I want to point out that the line running through the wall on the basement from the phone is actually a reference to the poster of Sinister, who was directed by the same person.
You know, you keep mentioning Sinister, and I keep getting the little visions of the way that the actual poster was, and there was a line that was running across the wall with blood coming out of it. So obviously I've seen the poster, I just haven't seen the movie, which
I've never heard of it. So
now you're pushing me into going to watch Sinister so I can do it on the sister podcast, the Horror Crypt podcast, which I do.
So obviously nice little plug there, huh?
It was a nice little segue, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So obviously we hear that Bruce does tell Finny about the floor tile. Now, when he first did this, and I sat there, I was watching it with you, and I'm like, hang on a minute, he wants you to dig a tunnel to escape? And it's like, well, mate, you would have to be digging for 6 solid months to get out from underneath that. But we realize what happens later on.
Yeah, later on, it all makes sense.
It all makes sense. It all comes together.
But did you know that the basement set was built on a 4-foot riser so that they could dig into the floor?
Oh, well, that makes sense because, as I said, the last part of the movie, we'll actually tie it all together and you'll know why it was that he dug in.
And I've got some cool trivia about that, too.
Oh, right. Cool.
Sure.
So the police are searching for Finn and they're unsuccessful. They can't find where he is. And of course the grabber then brings Finn some food and leaves it to the door and leaves it to him and says, oh, this is your food. And of course Finn now goes, what's in it? And he goes, salt and pepper. And he goes, is that it? And he goes, you're already here. Why would I drug you? You're already here in the basement. I don't need to drug you to bring you down.
Which actually does make sense.
And it does. You know, I'm not going to drug you any further. You're down here.
Yeah, but that being said, some people like to drug people to do things to them.
Well, as the grabber says, and he stops himself. He goes, I won't do anything that you don't agree to. I was expecting him to go that I wouldn't do anything that you wouldn't want me to do.
But in which case, it'd be like, great, let me go home.
Yeah. But when he says that you won't, and he stops himself for a quick pause and then goes, I'll agree to, which basically means I'm going to do something to you. If you agree to it or not, it's going to happen.
But basically, it turns out that the grabber's wanting to play games.
Yeah. So, you know, the grabber does put the food on the ground and says, eat it, don't eat it, doesn't matter. You know, and he goes, oh, I've got to go upstairs. And he goes, why? And he goes, oh, I've got some things I've got to do upstairs. And of course, the grabber leaves. Now, we were both watching this going, hang on a minute. He didn't lock the door behind him. Well, we now get a phone call from another boy by the name of Billy, and he explains that there's a game that the grabber plays and that he's waiting upstairs.
Yeah.
Hello?
Don't go upstairs.
Why not?
It's a trap.
Are you Bruce?
Who's Bruce?
I was just talking to Bruce.
I don't know any Bruce.
He's a baseball player.
We don't play baseball here.
Who are you?
I don't remember.
Did you play soccer, football?
I delivered newspapers.
Billy. You're Billy Showalter.
Maybe.
No, you're Billy.
Do not go upstairs.
What is he doing?
He's waiting. On the other side with that fucking belt. He didn't say you can leave. So if you try, he'll punish you. He'll beat you with that belt till you pass out. It hurts, kid. It hurts real bad. You cry. You beg him to stop. We all did. But he just keeps beating you.
Now, I love the fact that with that explanation, don't go upstairs because he's waiting to beat the shit out of you.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that, and I love the fact that all these spirits are, and I don't really want to, call them ghosts, but all the spirits of these dead children are saying, hey, we're going to help you get out of here. No one helped us.
Yeah, like they're telling him how to access the window to try and get out the window. And
well, that's the next one that's coming, which is
now what's interesting is that Finn uses what appears to be an LED flashlight in the basement during his captivity. And I remember looking at that going, that does not look like the flashlight that I used when I was a kid. And it didn't quite, and it was been niggling away with me. And then I realized, yeah, it is an LED flashlight. These were not available in the 70s and definitely not common until the 21st century.
Yeah.
Until after the year 2000.
Yeah. I found that really interesting too, because there was that view of the LED light. So
yeah,
no. But as I said, you know, there's Billy, you know, saying, well, don't go upstairs because this is a game that he loves to play. So it's like, oh, okay.
Well, he did at one point sneak up and peek around the corner when he was sleeping.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's,
We are coming to that. So, of course, as we heard, Billy does instruct him to use the cord that Billy had actually laid on the ground to try and get out the basement window. And he's like, well, how do I do that? And you and I were sitting there going, well, how's that possible? Now, unfortunately, the cord that Finn was using to try and wrap around the bars that was going to go up the carpet, that wouldn't work either.
Yeah, because there was a rolled up carpet that he was using to try and stand on to get the cable to go up around the window, but it wasn't of such a way that you could like curve it and curl get it around there and bring it back down.
So what he really did is he fed the cord up through the carpet and then up onto the window and around. And I remember saying
that
to you,
still wouldn't have worked.
It wouldn't have worked because that would have to be so taut and it had to be so
it just the right. I mean, honestly, it would be hard enough just to shove it up through the carpet, let alone around the window.
Yeah. But even if you had a cord that was so pulled tight to go up there, by the time it got what could you think of, like a piece of steel, right? A long piece of steel. Think about when you get it up to the top, you've got to try and curve it. It's not going to curve unless you literally go and bend it. No, it's not. So unfortunately, that doesn't happen. And unfortunately, you know, Finn tries this, doesn't work. He breaks the bars on the window, preventing him from climbing back up. So it's like, okay, I can't get up there. Now, this is when Gwen starts to have this dream of Billy being abducted and confides in her father about what's happening. And of course, as we know, her father is not having any of this. He's got I don't want to know about it. Don't want to hear about it. Whatever you think is going to happen is not going to happen. So it's like, oh, okay. Now I love the fact that as we're going along, we're getting phone calls coming through.
Yeah.
And that's really quite cool because Detective Wright and Miller speak to a very eccentric man called Max, who's staying in the area with his brother. Now we don't know who this person is, but we'll get to that. And this guy, and he is really such a really great guy. He's one of these guys, and Max is one of the guys you'd probably like to be friends with on a very small basis, because he's like, okay, because you know, the police knock on his door, and he goes, oh, I got to know.
Like, oh my God, you guys are here about the kid. Oh, you've got to see that. And he's been, it looks like a serial killer's wall with all the kids and the strings mapping everything out. And it honestly,
it's like a spider's like web.
Who is obsessed with this case.
Yeah. Now, as far as I'm concerned, any police officer worth a damn would be sitting there going, I think we need to come, you need to come to the station.
I think you
talk.
Need to come with us.
Yeah. But he's like, I want to help. I should be helping. I was going to be a police officer. I wanted to be a police officer, but I couldn't. But I really want to help. I reckon it's this. And they're like, uh-huh. And they're like, well, you know what? If you've got an idea, you know, here's our card. If you come up with any ideas. And he's like, well, I can work with you. And he's like, they're like, no, that's okay. Just keep doing what you're doing. And they just left him as if to say, yeah, that's another nut job, you know. But unfortunately, it's revealed that Finney is being held in Max's basement, because and he's not aware of this. And he, obviously his brother is the grabber.
Yeah. Because he's like, my brother's at work right now.
Yeah. So there's
Max is unemployed and staying with his brother until he can get back on his feet.
Yeah, exactly. So the grabber does come with next scene. We see that grabber comes back down with some food for Finney or with Finn, and he tests Finn's honesty, and he makes it seem as if he was going to let Finn go. And and of course, this is when he decides to go upstairs again. And obviously we have a phone call that comes in, and this is a young boy by the name of Griffin. And he says that there is a game that the grabber likes to play, and it's called Naughty Boy. I could explain it, but I reckon we're going to let Griffin tell you exactly what's going on.
Hello? Hello? Hello?
You don't have much time. The grabber hasn't been sleeping. He thinks this might be it, that he's going to figure it out.
Who's going to figure it out?
His brother upstairs.
Are you Griffin?
Who?
Griffin Stagg.
Probably. It's all a little hazy, but I imagine you know all our names.
Every kid does. I didn't know you.
Nobody did. You spent so many years invisible, and then every kid in the state knows your name. You don't have much time.
Why hasn't he killed me?
You won't play the game. You have to play the game. If you don't play, he can't win.
What game?
Naughty Boy. If you don't play Naughty Boy, the grabber can't beat you. And if he can't beat you, he can't move on to the next part. And the next part of Naughty Boy was his favorite part.
What's the next part?
You don't have much time.
You said that.
He's not been sleeping.
You said that too.
Yeah, well, he is now in his chair. He passed out waiting for you to play.
What good does that do me? Wait, the door's still unlocked.
The door is still unlocked.
Do I just go?
There's a combination lock on the inside of the storm door. It was my bike lock.
Your bike lock?
Yeah, he took it when he took me.
What's the combination?
I don't remember.
Griffin.
I remember being afraid I'd forget it. That's why I wrote it down.
What? Where?
I carved it with a bottle cap in the wall.
Which wall? Which wall?
The one on the right. About shoulder height when you're sitting down.
Two, three, three, one, seven. Two, three, three, one, seven. Two, three, three, one, seven. Two, three, three, one, seven.
If you say so.
What is it? 23317 or 23317 or 23317?
I can't remember.
Griffin!
I can't remember. You'll have to try them all. And you'll have to be very quiet about it.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks.
So as we see that, you know, he's saying that without you going upstairs, there's no way in hell that you're going to win this game, that he's going to win the game.
He's going to win the game. But
he does go upstairs because because he has got the on the wall, there is a bike lock combination, and that's the combination to the
screen
lock.
Door to get out of the house.
Yeah.
Which so is now, something that Gwen sees in her dream is her brother at that door with that lock.
Yeah. So Finn knows that the grabber has fallen asleep, but he knows this naughty boy game, but he knows that he's got to go upstairs to unlock this padlock. Now, my first thought was, okay, you unlock the padlock, you run out, you run like the wind. But we realized that that doesn't work because unfortunately Finn does escape. And he flees down the street, but unfortunately, he's recaptured. And this is another thing that really got me annoyed, is that when he was recaptured, he's screaming at the top of his lungs.
And people are coming on, turning on their porch lights, coming out, looking around, but the grabber's got him.
And says, if you move, I will slit your throat. So he doesn't say anything. And then you see the three porch lights that were turned on.
Go back
three off. Three of them turn off. And it's
so
like,
close.
Oh God. And it makes you really start. You're on the edge of your seat right now going, oh my God. So he gets thrown back into the basement. He's despondent about his attempts to try. And of course, you're trying to get out of this situation. So we hear the phone ring again, and it's from this guy by the name of Vance, who Finn was very, very, very scared of. And Vance informs Finny of a connecting storage room that he can escape through if he breaks a hole in the wall and exits through the freezer on the other side of the wall. Now, Finn creates the hole with a toilet tank cover and enters the back of the freezer, only to discover that the freezer door is locked. Now, this is when you think to yourself, oh, shit. Okay, so he can't get out there. But there is something about this scene. And I don't have the sound grab, but there is something about this scene that will interlock with the entire movie.
And I'll explain all of that when
we get to it. And Kat will explain it because this is great.
But I just want to point out, if you were around and had one of those fridges with that kind of freezer back in the day, you would know that this is why your mother constantly screamed at you, don't play in the freezer, because once it closes, you can't get back out.
No, it wasn't locked,
but it was the type of seal that it created that you could not open it from the inside.
Yeah, because when you see the outside of the freezer, you can see that it's not locked. There's no padlock.
It's one of those that you would periodically hear stories on the news of kids playing hide and seek, and somebody thought it would be funny to hide in the freezer, and they suffocated.
Yeah.
You saw that all the time on the news.
So now the worst part about this is you see that Finn comes out of the freezer because he's come out from the freezer into the room.
Actually, basically sits down, pitches a fit and cries, and then comes out and says, now what else can I do?
He is so despondent and he's just got he just doesn't know what's going on. And the phone rings one more time. And this is his best friend, Robin.
Yeah.
Robin was the young guy.
Because it basically started from the first one that was taken and it's progressed up through the last one, which was Robin.
And Robin was Finn's best friend. And Robin was the one that actually helped him out, stand up to the bully and beat the shit out of these kids.
Yeah, I was devastated when Robin was taken.
And Finn gets the phone call from Robin. And this is absolutely a beautiful thing to hear.
Hey, Finn. What's happening?
Robin?
Hey, buddy. Don't cry.
I'm not.
Yes, you are. I can see you.
You can?
I'm with you. I've been with you this whole time.
You have?
A man never leaves a friend behind. My dad didn't leave his buddies behind when he went to NAMM. That's why he didn't come home. And I'm not coming home either. And I'm not going to leave you behind.
We'll be together again soon.
Fuck that. You ain't gonna go like I did.
I've tried everything. Nothing's worked.
Yet.
Robin.
You remember what I told you?
That I needed to see Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Before that.
That someday I have to stand up for myself.
Someday is today, Finn. Today is the day you stop taking shit from anybody.
Not a fighter like you, Robin. You couldn't even take him.
You've always been a fighter, Finn. That's what we have in common. While we were friends, you were always afraid to throw a punch, but you always knew how to take one. And you always got back up. Every time.
I'm not strong enough.
You have to be. You're getting out of here. If you can't do it for you, do it for me.
What does it matter?
Because I don't want to die for nothing. I want to at least have died for a friend. And because I can't kill that hijo de puta, you have to do it for me.
How?
You're going to use a weapon.
What weapon?
The one in your hand.
The phone?
Fill the receiver with dirt. Pack it in tight. Give it some heft.
Then what?
Then you practice. Over and over. You raise the phone. Take a fast step back. Step forward, step back, and swing. Try it.
No?
Yes. You raise the phone. Take a fast step back. Step forward, step back, and swing. Again, you raise the phone. Take a fast step back. Step forward, step back, and swing. Again, you raise the phone. Take a fast step back. Step forward, step back, and swing. Again, you raise the phone. Take a fast step back. Step forward, step back, and swing. You've got it. Now fill the phone with dirt like I told you.
Will I still be able to talk with you?
This was the last call, Finn. Saw you from here on out.
I miss you, Robin.
Then do right by me. Get out of here.
I will.
Bye, Finn.
Bye, Robin.
And I love the use of my father was in the war and he never left anyone behind and I'm not going to leave you behind. I've been here. I've been with you all along and you're getting out of here, Finn. And
there were, we forgot to say about the spinning bottle and when he would catch.
Well, that spinning bottle was basically to show where the cable was that was running through.
Right. I know. But it was basically him going, fuck, there's a ghost in here with me.
Yeah. Because
sorry,
when
give me to swear.
That's OK. It's a fine because one of the when the grabber gives him a drink, there's a bottle that's left and it spins. And of course, the bottle then spins and points to the wall, which is that's a phone cable that you can use to trip the grabber up. Yeah. Oh, and by the way, and he looks into the corner with his flashlight and there is a kid literally sprawled out in the, just hovering off the ground.
Yeah.
And that's when the phone rings. And of course that was when Vance came up. So we see now that Robin has now said, well, the compacted dirt that you've actually got, you can put that into the receiver of the phone and use it as a weapon to beat the shit out of the grabber. So I was like, okay. So he's coaching him backwards and forth, step backward, step forward, punch, punch, step backwards. And so he's really making sure that he's aware that the grabber's going to come towards you. So as he's coming towards you, you step back and then two steps forward, you hit him with the receiver, then step back away from his reach. And this is Robin's coaching him, getting ready, because this is the final push. We are going to get you.
Life.
Yeah, we're going to get you out of here, Robin, but you have to help us. So this is going to be the fight of your life. Get ready. So I love that. And of course, Gwen dreams of Vance's abduction and discovers the property of the grabber, and she finds the house and contacts Detective Wright and Miller. Now,
yeah, she saw the front of it with the house number.
Yeah, and it's like, okay. And see, this is another thing, and this is another little thing that will tie in for the rest of the movie. There is a bit of continuity between what she sees and what really happens.
Now, I also want to point out that Finn's conversations with the missing kids on the phone were actually shot with Mason Thames, who played Finn, actually speaking to the other actors on the phone.
That's good. I like that because that really makes a lot great realism.
Yeah.
In the movie, which I really do appreciate as a movie watcher.
Now, and they actually rewrote the ending a couple of times, searching for the best way to kind of close it out.
Yeah.
And an earlier idea saw the return of the ghost kids as Finney is completing what happens, but the director decided later having him just hear them on the phone was better. And
yeah,
we kind of hear their voices in Finn's mind.
But we also do see a couple of them. We do see two of them. We see Vance and we see one of the other young guys talking to him, standing right next to him. But obviously Finn can't see them, which is good, because I don't think he needs to see them. Hearing them over the phone is more impactful.
Yeah.
Because you get to really, you know, feel that. Of course, as all this is happening, we see that Max comes downstairs and he realizes that shit, Finn is being held at the house. And what I really got so upset with is that instead of Max coming downstairs and goes, "Holy shit, you're that kid they're looking for. I'm going to get you out of here." What does Max do? "Holy shit, you're the kid they've been looking for. Do you want to know how I found you?"
Yeah.
And it's like, no. That's we don't want to know, because he's like, "Oh, dude, I'll tell you how I found you." So, and we're like, we don't want you to know. Just
tell me later.
Get Finn out of the house. Tell me later. But of course, at this stage, we see that there's Max trying to explain to Finn all the wonderful ways he got through to trying to figure out how to solve this case. And there's the grabber standing right behind him with a fucking axe.
Yeah.
And puts the axe straight through his head and kills him.
Which was
and
a shocking moment. It's like, I just didn't see that coming.
And of course, what does the grabber do? The grabber stands there with the axe in hand and he goes to Finn, "Do you see what you made me do? You'd made me kill my own brother.
And now I have to go bury him."
Yeah. He's like, "No, idiot. You don't have to. You didn't have to kill him."
Now, the director did say that the axe to the head was a very difficult special effect to do. He said that he looked through the whole history of cinema and there just aren't any real shots of an axe going into a head on camera. And they pull it off here with a combination of both practical and visual effects.
Oh, okay. I would have thought Savini would have figured that one out. I mean, Savini is the master of it. So Tom Savini is the gore master. So I would have thought he would have had some idea to do that. Okay. Nope. Didn't realize that.
Nope. So, of course, you would think with all the Westerns that have been through and the tomahawk shoes, there would have been something. But
yeah, but the tomahawks are usually really small to the front of the head.
And they would always cut away and not show it. Yeah. So this is the first time it's ever been shown like that.
Yeah, I like that. It's very impactful, but it was one of those holy shit moments when you see that on the movie. So
one of those. It's like, I can't believe I just saw what I just saw.
I know. So the police rush to the house that Gwen found. Gwen had been saying, you know, this is this number. This is where he is. So they rush in, but unfortunately they find it empty. But in the basement they find the buried bodies of the grabber's victims. So you first think, well, hang on a minute. Well, Finn's there. How is it that she saw the number? She saw the grabber standing at the front of this house. So how is it that you go down the basement and Finn's not there? You just see bodies. Well, we find out that the grabber then attacks Finn with an axe, but Finn manages to grab the grabber with the cord that he'd actually strung across the ground. And this, remember where we said that he'd been digging up the ground? Well, what he did is he dug up part of the basement and he put a carpet over the hole. So as the grabber goes to attack him,
he unrolled the carpet that was under the window and put that over the hole.
So he's put it over the hole. So as the grabber is running forward to grab Finn, Finn jumps over the cord and jumps over the hole. The grabber runs towards him, trips over the cord and falls into the hole. So now he can't get out. And it's awesome because this is at this stage that Finn basically grabs the because he goes to run past him and he's trapped by his ankles because there's a bar placed at the bottom. And of course, one of the ghosts taunts the grabber over the phone. And of course, this is when Finn grabs the cord that's strung along the ground, slings it over the grabber's neck.
Oh, I thought he used the cord on the bottom of the phone.
Oh, sorry, it was the phone. That's right. Yeah. He grabbed the phone, put it over
his
neck.
Because he left the cable really long on that.
That's right. And he pulled it, to the point that he actually snaps the grabber's neck and breaks it.
As he's wrapping it around the grabber's neck and the grabber is struggling against him, you hear the baseball kid, you hear
taunting
his
him.
Voice say, "Your arm is mint."
Yeah.
And that's when he really goes and breaks his neck.
Yeah. And it's like, oh, my God. Of course, as he's going to, now you think, okay, so Finn has killed the grabber.
Well,
he can now leave.
Yeah.
But there is something coming up.
Yes, there is something coming up. But before we leave this section, it was actually Ethan Hawke's idea to have the grabber react with panic when Finn removes his mask, because he does finally remove the mask.
Yeah, we see him.
And it was also his suggestion that he slide fully into the hole after he's killed.
That was more impactful. Like that.
Yeah, that was Ethan good. Hawke.
Yeah.
And I like that this was really, it sounds like it was really like a group effort, that the director wasn't just like, this is how you're going to do it. He really listened to his actors and he let them be part of that creative brainstorming process.
Yeah, great input. And that's what I really like about this, is great input. So now, remember we were telling you about the fact that Finn had gone into the freezer but couldn't leave from that area. Well, as Finn is heading out towards the door, the grabber had brought down a guard dog.
A giant Rottweiler.
A very vicious Rottweiler.
Yeah.
And what does Finn do?
Okay.
He's got a huge steak out of the freezer.
That has been melting ever since he threw it out of the back of the freezer. Yeah.
And so threw it to the dog, which then lets the dog walk over casually to the meat and starts to eat it, allowing Finn to escape. And walk up the stairs.
So what is really cool about this, and you don't put it together until afterward, this is great storytelling. Great storytelling is completely unexpected, but once you get to the other side of it, you realize it's the only way it could have happened.
Okay.
But you didn't see it coming at the time that it was happening.
No.
So every method of escape that the kids on the phone tell Finn is used to fight off the grabber in this final sequence.
Yeah.
The hole, the cable, the freezer with the meat to get the dog away from the door, packing the phone with dirt, even the padlock combination.
Yeah. Because it's at this stage that we see that Finn walks up the stairs and walks to the front door where he's got the combination. And Finn exits the house, which is across the street from the grave sites. So
is Gwen saw the house with the graves. So that's where everybody's focused.
Yeah.
And they're but he's not there. He's not there. Yeah. And then he walks out and they're like, holy crap, he owns the house across the street.
So it was the house across the street was, yeah.
Exactly, it takes you a minute to realize what's actually going on with that, because you're like, wait, what?
Because you really had to sit there and go, well, hang on a minute. Why was it that she saw that number at that house, but it was just the grave sites? Where is Finn? But when he walks out, you're like, oh, shit. Now we realize.
Yeah.
It was two houses. And that's why the grabber was able to do what he was doing in one house and then move the bodies to the other house.
Yeah.
Without being seen. You're just going across the street to your other house.
Yeah.
So, of course, Finn exits the house, and it's at this stage that he is reunited with Gwen, and the police rush the property. Of course, the siblings, thank God, they comfort each other, which they have done in the past.
And his father's there, and he apologizes to his little girl, Gwen, saying that he'll never doubt her dreams again.
Yeah, which is wonderful.
And of course, a little too late.
And I love the fact that Finn goes back to school, and Finn is, I mean, obviously, you're a changed person, but he confidently walks into school and sits next to his crush in the class. That he's had a bit of a crush of this girl, but he sits there very confidently. And of course, this is when the movie then fades to black, and that is the end of The Black Phone.
Okay.
Now, on a scale of 0 to 5 movie reels, 0 being how do I get the last 103 minutes of my life back, because that's how long the movie runs for, to 5 it was a perfect movie and I'd watch it all over again, what would you give this movie?
A solid 4.
I'm giving it a 4.5.
I thought about that, but
I would watch it again if I came into a room and someone said, you know, if I'd been watching it, they came in and said, what are you watching? Oh, The Black Phone. Oh, I'd love to see that. Yeah, we'll watch it again. I'd do that. It was great.
Now that you've wrapped up, can I do the last 5 pieces of trivia?
Yes, you can.
So as the credits are rolling, we're hearing music from the Brian Jonestown Massacre, which happens to be the director's favorite current still touring band. And he actually went to them and asked if they could write and record a new song for the end credits with something with a real 70s vibe. And he absolutely fell in love with what they brought him.
Yeah, it is actually a good bit of music at the end. It really encapsulates 1970s.
I don't remember the music.
It's so 1970s.
There's a thing called the grab and go in the movie is called Ellison, which is also the name of Ethan Hawke's character in Sinister from 2012.
I got to see this movie now.
Yeah, I know. Also, at the beginning of the film, we see Vance Hopper playing pinball, and behind him, somebody gets into a fight and is thrown into the magazine rack. Now, if you look really closely, there are 4 Starlog issues seen on the magazine rack. The first one is the first one on the top is number 17 from October 1978, which is current to when it takes place. So that's good. But the next three issues are 27 from October 79, 28 from November 79, and the bottom issue is 31 from February 1980.
Why do they do that for?
Because they don't think people are going to pay that close.
Is it just like an Easter egg they throw into things?
Yeah, sometimes. Yeah.
It's like if you watch the Rocky Horror Picture Show, they've got Easter eggs all over the place. And one of the huge ones that you can see is when Frankenfurter is sitting on his throne, like, you know, sideways, there is a red egg underneath him.
A literal Easter egg.
A literal red Easter egg sitting underneath him.
Well, apparently in Ben-Hur with Charlton Heston from like 1960 something, if you're paying attention during the chariot races, there you can see a Volkswagen in the background.
It's a little yellow Volkswagen.
And somebody's wearing a digital watch.
Yeah, there is. I don't know why they have the idea of throwing because people forget
and they don't, you know, whatever. But the grabber is wearing jewelry, two rings and a silver bracelet.
Yep.
They actually belong to Ethan Hawke.
Really?
Yeah, they're his own stuff.
Oh, I like that. Well, that just helps the costume, I guess.
Okay, now last one.
Yes.
Executive producer Jason Blum from the House of Blum sent director Derrickson a black phone in a display case after reading the script and giving the film the green light. Derrickson moved into a new house in 2021 and Blum secretly had a black phone mounted on the wall of the new house's basement. I was just sitting in my living room and I heard a phone ring in the basement and I was like, oh my God. He discovered that Blum had it set to speed dial his cell phone whenever it was lifted from the cradle.
I love that. That's brilliant. I really do love that. That is a great little bit.
Yeah, so I thought you'd get a kick out of that. But yeah, I have to say that
I did like this
previews
movie.
I liked the previews because it really sucked you in, but it didn't tell you the whole movie in the previews.
No.
I hate it when they do that.
Yeah.
And I do not like horror movies, but I think this was really more thriller than horror.
It was borderline. The thing is, you did get to see some horror, but it's very close to,
Yeah. But I really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I really thought it was well done.
And I will honestly say,
and that's a lot coming from me.
Yeah. It's currently playing on Netflix. So if you've got Netflix, by all means, please go and watch this movie. You really won't be disappointed. You won't be sitting there going, 103 minutes, is it actually going to get going or is it going to finish? It'll keep you on the edge of your seat and you'll keep really engaged in this movie. There's not one part of the movie that I sat there going, is it finished yet? It just sucked me in. I mean, the trailer itself sucked me in. So, you know. Yeah.
Speaking of engaged.
Yes.
Podcasts live and die with ratings and reviews. So we would absolutely love it if you enjoyed this episode. If you like our podcast, please make sure to give us a rating and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, because that's how it really helps spread the word. And please tell your friends. We'd love to have more people along for the ride in the chat and the movies.
Absolutely. And remember, you can email us at hello@homeclassmoviechat.com. And that way you can send us any suggestions you might have for movies. And we are open to all movies. So don't just think that we're going to do, you know, horror or thriller, or give us anything, comedy, drama, you name it. It's all up to you.
It's all fair game.
Yep. You guys are running the show. Even if you think there are some really bad B, C, and D grade movies,
we'll do those as well. We did Birdemic and Birdemic 2.
And Plan 9 from Outer Space, which is so cool.
Which was widely regarded as the worst film ever made until Birdemic.
It's funny. The thing is that I thought when I first saw Plan 9 from Outer Space, I mean, it is bad.
Plan 9 from Outer Space is so bad that it's awesome.
But it becomes awesome when you watch it multiple times.
But Birdemic and Birdemic 2 are just plain bad.
And just get ready, everyone, because when it drops, we are going to do Birdemic Part 3. And the best part about it is this is the last that James Wan is being allowed to do. They've said to him, he's not doing any more. Now, even though that he's funding these movies, he said, this is it, I'm done. And the original actor that started in number one, he's the last one that's actually come back. The girl that was in it, she said, no, thank you, not doing it anymore.
Can't do it anymore.
I can't do it. So when it comes out, we are going to do Birdemic 3. But as I said, hello at homeclassmoviechat.com. You can send us an email of any movie you'd like us to review. Leave your name, and we will definitely do it for you, 100% guaranteed.
Okay. So that being said, thanks for joining us for this podcast discussion of The Black Phone. We hope you enjoyed it. So in the until next time, grab your popcorn, grab your drink, and we'll see you at the movies.
Bye, everyone.